Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. And it is now or never. And that debt is fraud. And as we kind of dive through all of this, we're trying to help you in our appeals to heaven and in your appeal to heaven. We're trying to help you learn what you need to know and how we got here so that we understand the importance of what we need to do. In doing this, this will actually help us learn, pray, and act. In other words, it'll help us focus in being far more direct in what we need to be doing in our actions as well as what we need to pray for. So I try not to belabor the point. It's just a matter of telling you we got to continue learn, praying, and acting, folks. The whole point behind everything is obtaining full compliance of the Constitution. Our Republican form of government is one that is based on the rule of law, that the supreme law of the land is the Constitution. If we're not abiding by the Constitution, then we're going to get a government that is behaving in ways that they have no authority to, and actually, they have progressed to a point, our government, and when I say our government, I'm going to be inclusive with your state, the federal state, and even your county. So in other words, based on how the federal government has started operating outside the box, they have literally enlisted your state legislature as well as your county legislature in conducting warfare against you. They don't have the authority to do any of these things. And yet, because the opportunity has presented itself, the globalists have truly sought this opportunity to capitalize in preparing you and your community as well as your governments in capitulating into their communist fold. And it will be one that we will... There'll be this facade, this seem like you have some liberty as long as you're supporting the government. See, the divine hand of providence, the divine hand of providence understood these false, or I should say these misguided loyalties towards religion and government. And therefore, one of the things that he tells us is to be, you know, vigilant to the word, vigilant to the scriptures. And in our government, he created the exact same model, vigilant to the Constitution, not to the people, not to the party, not to the government, this office, what office, whatever. To be clear, we have a very clean way forward, and it's all centered on full compliance to the Constitution. Now, this is probably going to be one of my very last few shows where I actually don't go into content. Over the past week, you were basically assaulted with three repeats of older shows. And I apologize for that. There's just really no good mechanism for me to maintain all of the shows or the content that we actually have done to present to you. In other words, we have the ability to give you one class after the next class or content. I like to consider this content of education. This is educational content. There's the entertainers out there, and they just want to keep you fixated on, you know, the problem du jour. Well, let's examine what the heck's happened here. And yet there's no progress in taking back the government. Now, I'm going to dive into, you know, what happened last week. I'm not on the personal side for me, but a little bit on that. So an emergency came up, which literally took me away from being able to launch my show on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. I was able to then engage and actually launch the show on Thursday and Friday. So when you go to the podcast page, and not now because I'm still a little overwhelmed, and so I'm backed up on not updating the website. I'm hoping by next weekend I'll get to that, if not sooner, so that you can actually, you know, download those shows that are relevant. These are very dangerous times. And as a matter of fact, I think a lot of people are starting to realize that this is warfare. And some people call it legal fare. I don't care what you want to call it. As I have said before, those who are promoting the godless secular government and control over all people, the communists, their credo is the ends justify the means. And if they can get away with it, they will. And they use the Constitution to try to protect themselves. As a matter of fact, bottom line, we've seen in the wake of the assassination last week, a lot of people have lost their jobs or being harangued and called out for their form of free speech. I want to place context to this. Is there not a constitutional right for free speech? I mean, we've gotten to a preemptive mode where the Secret Service, if you make any threat against any president, regardless of how unconstitutional and how egregiously a president could be violating the Constitution, it doesn't matter. If you've communicated a threat, they will descend upon you like that. Because we have got to the point where rhetoric and hyperbole have reached such levels that they can't afford to allow the president to be assassinated. Now, let's look at the camps here, because we have we have lots of camps, right? There's all these little factions of people in America. The left is a very large faction, and they all seem to be on board. And there are the moderates in the left camp that will say, well, okay, yeah, that guy crossed the line. He needs to be fired. They need to go. There are those. But when we really look at the camps, the left is very consolidated on moving forward. There are many people that are moderates that really, they're still in denial. They don't believe that there's this communist movement in America, that they're actually in the final throes of laying down their ultimate plan in collapsing America. And I'm going to tell you, folks, my primary suspicion of the methodology or the way they're going to collapse America would be financial. It will force us into a global monetary system, and it will be digital. And in other words, they are ultimately taking away your property. Because if you can't commute your property into a hard, tangible currency that we use to buy and sell with, then that currency really doesn't exist. And it's not yours, and therefore, one can easily make the assumption or the presumption that all that you own really isn't yours either. And there are plenty of people that have gone around and basically said, yeah, that's kind of the case. Because everything that you put on your physical property, you really don't own that. Now, to be clear, all of these facades, all of these unconstitutional assertions are just that, an unconstitutional assumption of power, an unconstitutional exercising of power. They do not have the constitutional authority to be doing any and all of this. They don't have the constitutional authority to be printing money that is not commutable to gold and silver. And yet we see that they're just marching forward at breakneck speed. I don't want to invoke, because it shocked me, and I am absolutely shocked with a conviction of understanding where we are. They will kill us. We need to do better. And unfortunately, we live in a society that we are demanding protects the individual liberty of citizens. I have said this, and I have said this, and I have said this, that when it comes to citizenship, any person who has actually stood up on record that they do not care about the Constitution and compliance to it, that they want unconstitutional government, and they want socialism, they want it now, they want welfare, they want to collapse our system. They are literally running a rebellion against the Constitution. This is an insurrection in so many different ways. There are different waves, and I say not ways, waves with a V, V-E-S, waves. There are all these different waves that are all coordinating and working to basically undermine our government, our solvency, our sovereignty. So many things that they're doing. And so we actually have to start realizing where we are. And folks, the Toryaks, this is why those Toryaks are so critical. The framers, or I should say our forefathers, because the Toryaks were not the framers. They were the forefathers in standing up against our former government. And when they did so, when they realized that their rights of Englishmen were being taken away, then they stepped into a new paradigm that they are going to abandon that form of government and create one that will actually protect the liberties, the privileges and immunities, or what we call liberties, of the individual, so that individual liberty and individual sovereignty will live forever in this new form of government. Now, they weren't doing this to create, you know, this opportunity of, you know, playing the market so that they can get advantages of getting rich. There was nothing that these people that were leading, these people that were in office, there's very few of them, very few, that are corrupt like we see today. I have to acknowledge that Hamilton has all of the, let's just say, he has all of the signs that really do commit him to crossing the line, not having scruples, and actually being being a man with rife with moral turpitude. I have no qualms of saying that that man was running an insurrection under our very noses. And there were others that were a part of the British effort that were remaining that we didn't call out as loyalists, because they were kind of having both sides or both feet straddling that line. One line supporting America and the other line supporting Britain. And we understood the danger of anybody that had their foot on that British side in supporting Britain. But we just didn't have a process or a way of identifying who those people were. Hamilton, again, was one of those people. There's no doubt, as I see how everything is stacked up and his actions as it went forward into the Federalist Papers, and everything he did beyond the Constitution only proves that that man was working to undermine the Constitution. He should have been stripped of his citizenship. Just like they stripped the citizenship and the right to even be here as inhabitants. The Toryaks literally removed 100,000 plus people off of American soil, saying you have no right to be here and we're taking your property. I've said this over the past few shows, over this past summer in a couple of the shows, that Bill Gates ought to be stripped down to his skivvies. Every piece of property, all of his, every down to his pennies, down to his last penny, should be confiscated. That man should be basically escorted and deported to a communist state, whether that be South Korea, China, or, you know, Russia is not communist enough. They're evil, but they're not communist enough. Or we can basically send him to Iran. That would be probably another place of totalitarian government where he would actually have to be a subject of that government. See, as citizens, we're subjects of the Constitution, not the government, which is why when you look at the oath of office, who are you truly swearing to? You're not swearing allegiance to the United States. You're swearing allegiance to the government. We're swearing allegiance to the U.S. Constitution. And as technically, as citizens of your state, we should also be swearing allegiance to that state constitution. So as we kind of go forward, and one of the things I need to kind of advise you of, if this recording sounds a little bit different than the other ones, I've come up with a new process to try to maintain a really balanced output in the recording to help alleviate the amount of time it takes for me to actually edit the show, get the dynamic peaks good enough so that when you listen to the show, you can hear every word instead of having, you know, things kind of suppressed or being so quiet you miss it. So my goal is to give you audio files that we can preserve for you, that you can download, so that you can hear and understand every word. And I know every once in a while we have some connection problems where Tammy garbled out this past summer. I do my best to avoid those things. But with radio and doing these things live, believe it or not, these are being done live. There is no real editing to the content. I do not change and go through and let me insert something different there. There's nothing like that that happens. So technically, this is a live presentation. Now, anyway, let me get back to Charlie Kirk, where we are with that, so that we can kind of place a constitutional perspective. Now, I know I criticize the conservative entertainers, and Charlie Kirk is one of them, because they're not taking a constitutional position. As long as we do not place context to what is happening constitutionally, then nobody understands the urgency of these problems. When we look at because I've said this before, when we look at an argument regarding reparations, it is not about, you know, what's right or wrong. It's not about any morality or anything like that. The Constitution does not allow it to be ex post facto laws to be created. Not even an amendment can become an ex post facto law. So that was one of the points of the 14th Amendment. When we look at Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, folks, go look at it. The original language of the 14th Amendment was literally to hold those men in the South accountable for what they considered was a crime. Now, if they want to actually pursue them for treason, treason is in the Constitution, but they didn't do that. And technically, they knew that what they did was not treasonous. And as a matter of fact, the argument can go back and forth. Who was really committing treason? The northern states, or the laws that they were using, were treasonous because they were literally creating bills of attainder and punishment. And that's another law that they can't pass, to actually go after people, to punish people for what their previous behavior was or wasn't was. So if you understand, please, folks, you need to look these up in the dictionary so you understand what an ex post facto law is and what a bill of attainder and punishment is. The Constitution does not allow either the federal or state governments to pass laws that do those things, and amendments can't do that either. The whole point of this government was to be right as possible moving forward, and there's a mechanism in it to get right. So when we realize that there's a problem with the Constitution, we get it right and we move forward. We don't linger and go, oh, look at the harm. As a matter of fact, technically, there should be no suits, you know, against the federal government for harms committed to you other than loss of property and possibly loss of life, but nothing punitive. Remember, the auspices of common law were, you know, within the framers, that was their paradigm. They were all operating in that paradigm, and they were looking to ensure justice would be served, not ways and mechanisms of making lawyers and courts rich and maybe, you know, some poor sap, you know, get a windfall of a lot of money. Those paradigms of law are civil law, Roman law. They are not a part of our system except in Louisiana, who has civil law. And there's an argument, and I've made the argument, that Louisiana, after the 14th Amendment, should have been mandated to abolish their civil law legal system and implement common law under the Constitution. Not common law under the British monarchical theocracy, but common law under the Constitution of the federal government and the Constitution of the state. Ergo, these are the powers given them. And if common law is a part of their jurisdiction, then they have the right and jurisdiction over all matters of common law, such as contract law, such as marriage. Right? I mean, marriage is like a contract. It is a civil contract, but it doesn't matter. Those are basically issues of common law. The federal court does not have any jurisdiction over matters of common law. None. And the right, the Seventh Amendment right of matters of common law, when the controversy is greater than $20, the right of a trial by jury is to be protected. Which means that if you're going through a divorce, folks, you and your spouse, whichever, you know, he, her, whatever, when you're going through a divorce in common law, you have a right. If you have no property, if you're literally homeless and have nothing, then you can just be done and annulled with your marriage, right? That's a common law process of annulment. However, if you do have property, then you need to go, especially if the value of that controversy or the property is greater than $20, then you have a right to actually state your case to a jury of your peers. The precious right of a jury is integral in justice to ensure that both cases are heard by the people of your community and they decide your fate instead of a judge basically pushing their agenda. Now, I've actually made this case, and I want to just reiterate this. When we look at how the godless secular church has influenced this black robe of clergy in the federal court systems, they have gone after men for being men. They have gone after people, a parent, for being Christian and the other one being godless. And they punish. Instead of actually having the peers judging, they move the agenda forward and they go after those who are not playing their game, who are not bowing at their altar of their godless secular government. So this makes the case that, and I've said this before, and this is in my very first book, that they created the black regiment in the federal courts, not the black regiment of clergy, but the black regiment in the federal courts have actually established the Antichrist Church. This is how far we've gotten. Folks, I'm running out of time, but what I want to do, because we've got about a minute left, we're going to go into a break. When we come back, I really want to talk about the state of our affairs here and how we really need to be, everybody needs to be on guard. As a matter of fact, any function you have, as a matter of fact, if you're having a function, I would actually start looking for a local militia and ask them to participate in the security measures. If you don't have a local militia, you need to start having that discussion. Now, I believe every state has the right, except for, I think, Massachusetts actually made a law that says you can't have that. You can't have a militia. Now, as far as I'm concerned, that needs to be challenged because the state cannot deny the counties their right of having a militia because it goes down to the counties. When you looked at the architecture of the militia. The militia was actually an apportionment based on county population, that each county would have one. The fact that the state is denying the security of the people and justice and protection of property and life, then to me, the state is absolutely culpable in the loss of life, the loss of property, those types of things. So as we kind of look at going into this break, when we come back, I will dive more into what we need to be doing and how we need to be working together, how we need to unite on the Constitution. And as a matter of fact, when we come back, I'm going to start off with how the framers abhorred the concept of infamy. We'll be right back after this.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
And I do want to actually solicit any comments they have regarding the audio quality. If the audio quality isn't where you'd like it to be, then let me know. And let us, you know, figure out what we're doing wrong here, because I don't have the time to sit down and listen to a whole show when I'm done. I've got so many number one priorities that it is absolutely just overwhelming. Now, actually, I don't think I covered last week, other than the fact that I was pulled into a personal emergency that really required my focus for the past week, that I was unable to air the show. It wasn't because we were being denied of service, which has happened in the past, but this particular case was one that I was just unable to launch the shows. And so I had to make accommodations knowing that. And there may be point in time down the road, folks. Don't think that I was assassinated as well until it's been confirmed. So, because I know a lot of people, oh, shoot, he's not, because I always air. I mean, we're always, even on holidays, you will get new content. I do not like rerunning anything unless it's one of those things that I just needs to be replayed. You know, maybe I need to replay that recording with former Congresswoman Bachman, or my former interview with John Durash or John Arvile. So you may get those, but bottom line, we don't have a better mechanism at this point of launching, because it is literally a point-to-point connection that needs to be initiated. And it's at this point, it's beyond me of how to automate that process. So with that, I want to just kind of move forward in what I was basically saying. When it comes down to notoriety and infamy, because the framers just abhorred the concept of, you know, them or anybody being raised up in a matter of notoriety. As a matter of fact, they were very clear. They did not want their likeness, their image, on any currency or money. They did not want any memorials. They were men that did the job at the time it was needed. History should just be teaching that. The fact that we're using those things instead of something, you know, I think we should actually have a much better currency instead of using the likeness of men. Because I believe, and they believe, that it was this tantamount to idolatry. And it's the same thing with people that, you know, whether it be Charlie Manson or these other people that have lived in infamy for the atrocities that they've done. Bottom line, what ends up happening is we actually create a paradigm for both sides. And it makes it hard for people, because we're raising children to actually hate and judge Stalin and Hitler and all of these evil people, Obama, that have been responsible for killing people and responsible for destroying nations. we as Christians really should try to avoid that. It's one thing to teach what they did, but it's another thing to teach the hate and animosity and disdain. It's the same thing with the love and admiration for another individual who's doing the right thing. I think it's a very dangerous game when we start playing flattery with those people we like. Because even though on both sides it's being done, it is a very dangerous tool. Flattery is the devil's tool. And it basically is used to help that person think more of themselves than they really should. It marginalizes, for the good people, it marginalizes that influence by the divine hand of providence. In his name, all should be done. If you're truly in that camp, then that's the paradigm. That's your paradigm if you're in that camp. And we see that there's so many people that think contrary to that. And we see people like this concept of we're all Charlie Kirk now. No, we're all combatants. We're all soldiers in this fight of good and evil. We're the good guys. That's the paradigm we really need to have. We need to understand what it is that solves the problem. Full compliance to the Constitution will get us to the point where we will be able to get rid of these evil players. I want you to understand what I just said. We will be able to remove all of these leaders that have done us evil, that basically reneged on their rights of citizenship, strip them, and deport them. This is the precedence that our forefathers gave us. You know, the people have been dancing past that line, and they've gotten so far beyond that line that it's actually entertaining to see how they have been suspended in air with trickery and chicanery. And as far as I am concerned, it doesn't matter what they've done or what they're doing. They've crossed the line. They've got to go. And we need to start implementing that concept of the Tory Acts, holding people accountable, fully accountable. Let me get into what I think is really, really important, how we need to be focused. You need to actually be working on petitions. You need to actually be working with your county commissioners or supervisors, whatever you call them, your county legislators. We need to actually start having the discussion of what it takes. I'm already being asked. I am already being asked because of why counties matter most. People have come up to me and have said, have you got a county constitution ready to go? And I have to laugh a little bit because that's very presumptuous of me to think what the paradigm of the people in any given county would be on what government they want to strip away from their state, make sure that those powers are, the mass of those powers are either within the county or restrained from the state and federal government. That's the kind of constitutions we need to be working on. And it's not flattery. It is, to me, it is a duty and an obligation to try to set this forward. And so I'd be happy to start working, because believe you me, as soon as you have a Constitutional Compliance Committee, does not make a constitutional convention for your county. And as a matter of fact, you do not want to just instantly do that, because you need to help everybody start learning and understanding the critical components and parts and framing of an enumerated constitution, which is why, folks, we actually created a color-coded constitution that identifies the enumerations in the federal constitution. This way, you can actually start seeing, you know, how to frame a constitution in the same manner. If you're going to have offices at the county level, if you're going to have an auditor, then that's fine. You know what? I would like to actually see the elections go back to the sheriff. I would actually, because I believe that the sheriff should actually have the oversight over, because that's what the sheriff used to do. He used to take the elections and execute them. Right now, I think many states have civil offices, whether it's an auditor or what have you. Because those people aren't under oath, with, or they're under oath, but they're not under oath with sidearms. The chance of somebody coming along trying to steal or to do something bad in regards to an election with these armed men, I think they would think twice before trying to pull some stunts. And as a matter of fact, I believe that by moving it away from the auditor's office, I don't even understand why the auditor's office exists. It's just a bureaucratic level. But let's look at this proposal of having the sheriff and the militia involved. The militia means men and women, and it means that it's not a partisan effort. It is a legal effort in ensuring that citizens, only citizens, are capable of voting in elections where there are federal names on that election ballot. Now, if a state wants to extend elections to people that are beyond, then they need to actually create a separate ballot if they want to do that. And what I mean by that, they have to have these legal statuses where they're actually legal inhabitants. You can't take an invader and make them legal. Just to be clear here, folks, they can't make something illegal legal. But they do have, and we do actually have, inhabitants living in almost every state. These are what we call state nationals. These are people that decided to give up their U.S. citizenship. Do we want them to be able to vote in the state elections, and do we want them to consider them as state citizens? Or are they removing themselves as a state citizen as well? Because as a state citizen, they should be paying state taxes. See, my real problem with all of this is the fact that as a citizen, before you surrendered that duty, responsibility, and birthright, before you go down that path and surrender that, you actually had an obligation to seek full compliance. Now, I understand, I completely understand, and I'm very empathetic with how many people are so illiterate regarding the Constitution, what it means, what's supposed to be happening, and this is how so many people have been misinformed over the past decades, I mean centuries, actually, going back to the late 1800s, the misinformation campaign began. When the Fabian Society came to America, their objective had to be to absolutely pervert our understanding of our government and our system so that they could ensure that it would be subverted so that they could undermine it. The warfare, again, was what? Against the Constitution. It wasn't warfare against the corrupt people that were allowing this to happen. It wasn't warfare against the edifices of government, these buildings that were created by our tax dollars. It wasn't warfare created by the party. Even though these people are doing this, this is warfare against the Constitution. They're using these edifices, they're using these parties, they're using people in office to do things that are absolutely unconstitutional. So how important is compliance to the Constitution? It is paramount. It is of the utmost importance. There's nothing more important than full compliance to the Constitution. And I cannot emphasize that any more than I always have. So as we kind of look, let me see, I got about 14 minutes left. So as we start looking at what does it take, because we're kind of leaning into this Constitution, this county Constitution, we have to understand what it takes. And as a matter of fact, when you start dealing with these constitutional compliance committees throughout your county, you're going to realize that you may have counties that really probably shouldn't exist as a county because they can't sustain themselves. So this is where the conversations need to start happening in lieu of moving towards a constitutional convention and prior to counties really considering creating their constitution. It needs to be added, or at least super added, to, hey, you need to review whether you require subsistence from the state government, which means you need subsistence from the other counties and the citizens of those other counties to sustain your government. Because I can't say this enough. every government, and I don't know where that came on. Oh, it actually, so I apologize for that Windows, you know, noise, the intrusion from Windows. But every government must be able to self-sustain itself. In other words, you need to have the tax base, or you need to have the commerce, some tax base, somehow, that is absolutely going to sustain the necessary government for the citizens. Remember, this is not a government for corporations. This is a government of we the people. Therefore, you can have a county that may have a business in it, and that business could easily pay for its own government. But then that would not be a Republican form of government, at least one that would be in line with our Constitution. There are plenty of nations in the world that have been reconfigured to absolutely support the corporations and the businesses that have come forward and basically bought out the allegiance of the government from the people to the corporations. We've seen this happening in the United States, but that doesn't mean it's constitutional. It's not. Anyway, the point is that you have to have the ability to self-sustain. So you got to look at what that means. Now, don't forget that we, the people, are the law enforcement entity. In other words, if you don't have, and you don't need to have, a big sheriff's office, the militia should be either the ready reserves or active duty militia, and they are the ones that actually should be supporting the sheriff. Now, the other thing that we need to think about is we need to think about, do we really want to have government involved in providing benefits and retirement? Remember, the constitutions have never been amended to allow, I should say, the U.S. Constitution, and I'm going to bet most state constitutions, never allowed the state to grant themselves these unlimited benefits. Do you understand what I just said? Which means that there needs to be a mechanism, or we need to all make sure that we figure out what you want to do. If you want government to provide for a security net, i.e. Social Security, something like that, then that's up to you and the taxpayers and the people to do that. Most of the time when people look and view government and government doing that, they say, no. Now we don't want to do that because, or at least if you do, you want to make sure that it's defined tightly so that they can't expand beyond what you've granted. That's one of the reasons why the language in the enumerations were very clear to, as they use the term, den or contain those in government, those legislators, from being able to aggrandize or, you know, modify, you know, so that they could actually make more for themselves than what they were actually supposed to get. That's why language is pretty important in doing these. So as we move forward, you need to figure out what it's going to take for representation. Now, we've got a few extremes. We've got New Hampshire. In the state government, that I believe one person represents about 1,500 people at the state level. Is that adequate? Well, technically, when we look at the state government, if it literally has all responsibilities like it does currently, which it shouldn't, because the constitutions don't delegate that, but they've assumed these all. Every state government in the United States has assumed unlimited power. They've assumed it. Doesn't mean that the constitutions have granted it. They've assumed it. Okay. So you have to figure out what level of representation is adequate for your state government. Keep in mind, the reason why the federal government felt that 30,000 would be more than ample for representation, actually, that was what they thought was the high point. You know, going beyond that was going to be too much, that people couldn't get the representation. So the point is, for the individual representatives in the House of Representatives, they wanted to make sure that there was no greater than 30,000 people being represented by one representative. So what is it in the state level? And the reason they did this, again, if I hadn't stated it clearly, because they had so few powers, they could do so little, that they didn't even envision a full-time government. They envisioned that they would have to be called into session and do some work, and that would be it. Done. Go back home, plant your, you know, so they could actually maintain full-time jobs. At the state level, I believe that's the same case. We need to create general governments out of the state. Technically, the governments that were created originally were general governments with limited powers. They started assuming everything under the sun, especially as the federal government came along and, hey, you need to interface with our Department of Transportation. All this unconstitutional. All of this. So we need to look at, does the state need to have general powers, or I should say not general powers, do they, as a general government, do they need to have certain powers over, like, infrastructure? I think so. But we want to make sure that they don't have the control over that, you know, the strategies and so forth. That the requirement should actually be, and as a matter of fact, this is where the bicameral legislative body would actually be perfect. Because, folks, I'm going to contend that you don't need a Senate in your Senate. In other words, your senators are your county supervisors, your county commissioners. Now, the only reason you would have one person in the Senate, just one person in the Senate, and it would be a perfunctory responsibility. Let me explain this. It is only a fundamental, it is basically just that, a person to provide proxy if the county legislators have failed to actually provide the vote that is before the Senate at the state level. You don't need to have, you know, a senator making more money. The entire Senate should be, and it's the same thing with the U.S. Senate. The U.S. Senate should have one person representing the state, and that's a proxy, because all votes that would be cast on the ratification of a treaty, the ratification or the acceptance of a Supreme Court justice and or a bureaucracy or a bureaucrat, i.e. the unconstitutional, because most all of those are unconstitutional, right? I mean, all of the secretaries and all of these bureaucracies go away once we start getting in compliance. There won't be a DOT secretary. There won't be a HHS secretary. There won't be a labor secretary, commerce secretary, so forth and so on. In other words, we're talking about probably, what, 13? There's only going to be three left departments left, the original 13. So when we look at, you know, the state legislature being able to actually provide guidance. Now, currently, there are two senators, and those two senators are to represent that state legislature. Currently, there's no mechanism for real-time governing in the state constitutions or the federal constitution, but it has to start with the state, where the state legislature actually lays it out. And to me, it's really simple, folks. It's this simple to actually start setting up what we would call live governing or real-time governing, where you have the House and you have the Senate. Now, the Senate being these counties, right? So you have these counties, and each county would have one person proxy, if necessary, if they haven't voted or what have you. And let's just say a treaty comes along, and the House of Representatives want the treaty to be voted, to be approved. However, the county commissioners or the boards of supervisors, whatever, throughout the state, the majority of them want to disapprove that treaty. Then what would happen is there would be two votes in the Senate for the state. One would be for and the other one would be against, in representing the two separate bodies of the people and the county governments. Therefore, we would alleviate the ability for ownership of the U.S. senators to be done by globalist bankers and the people with deep pockets that have been paying billions of dollars to take ownership of our Senate. Do you understand what I just said? This right here, this language, what I just told you, is language that gets people killed. Now, when we really look at this, is definitive. This is actually laying out a representative government that is absolutely more accurately represented than what the framers envisioned, because at that point in time, they didn't have the technology and the capacity of understanding these things. But taking what they have done, there's no reason why we can't expound upon that and improve our government, our representative government, in representing we the people and the governments we create. And the most important government that we create, folks, is our local government, our county government. And so that's where the constitutions literally need to be pounded out to what we want them to do. The state government is only going to be a mechanism of supporting these county governments. Ergo, if there's something that's not within that state constitution, let's just say a healthcare system, Seattle, King County wants to have a healthcare system, or three counties in eastern Washington, Washington want to have a healthcare system. Okay, well, that means that it won't be delegated to the state, so they'll have to fund, manage, and everything themselves. If they want to have abortion clinics, and they want to have these types of things, very progressive policies, then they have to pay for and administer themselves. Now, the rest of the counties don't have to play that game, and they don't have to pay for that anymore. This literally changes everything. And as a matter of fact, what will end up happening is these counties, this always happens when you actually have a state, because Washington State has a minimum wage that is, $17 going on $20-some dollars. So Idaho being much less than that, every city that borders Washington State, every town like Coeur d'Alene, Boise, and so forth, there are plenty of people that live on that border that actually come into Spokane and actually make more money so that they can live their lavish lifestyle, and they're making bank off of these laws. Now, states that border these types of states that ingratiate bad behavior at the state level, now it'll be the same problem at the county level. Just keep in mind that there's nothing that keeps the surrounding counties around those western Washington counties that want to give everybody everything, for you to go and get a job and actually make money at a much higher rate, because they're just throwing money around until they go bankrupt. And that's your risk, but at least you can, you know, take that extra and commute back home to your little freedom county. These are the risks that happen when you actually start throwing out money. I mean, why do you think people want to come to America? Is because we're unconstitutionally stealing from those who have and giving it to those who shouldn't even have it. They shouldn't even be here having it. The Constitution demands that these folks be repelled, not paid, not given these grants of access and so forth. So anyway, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model, on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.